There's a big rule in the union that no two actors can have the same name.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Movement Radio. I am Chip Hazard.
Cheers, folks. It's Talon Williams.
I'm Roger Sierra.
And we're joined by a man of many voices, we will say. We are joined by the famous Kevin Conley. Kevin, how are you today?
Well, I'm great. I'm going to have to correct you, though, on a little something there.
Okay.
I have to go by Kevin M. Connolly.
Oh, okay.
I started Kevin doing this. M. I'll tell you why. I started doing this the moment I started doing anime 20-something years ago in Dallas. I'm originally from San Antonio, and that's where I went. I finished grad school. There was an actor strike going on. I moved back to Texas to do children's theater. And my goal was to move to Dallas to try and get into the acting union before getting back to LA. Well, there's a big rule in the union that no two actors can have the same name.
Oh.
Well, there is a very famous Kevin Conley from a show called Entourage. He was on a sitcom called Unhappily Ever After back in the day. So when I started at Funimation at the time, now Crunchyroll, obviously, I pushed to say you need to put Kevin M. Connolly just to make that little difference. And I was able to register under that name. So that's why the Kevin, and there's a great little clip of a commentary by Mike McFarland, who was the one that brought me in to this crazy industry, where I think it was him and Chris Kazin talking, two great guys, amazing directors. And Chris Kazin said, "Hey, it's Kevin Conley." And then Mike said, "It's Kevin M. Connolly. The M stands for macho." And I've gone with that ever since then. So if I ever get asked for a full credit, it's not going to be Miguel. It's going to be macho. So there we are. There we are.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
I love it.
We remember.
Yeah,
yes.
We ought to put a picture of you in the thumbnail with the Macho Man glasses on, just to make it even
better.
Oh, I
thought about, oh yeah, we're going to do that right tonight.
Yes.
Yeah. Dig it.
Yes.
Bone saws ready. Sorry, you got me.
Yes.
No, you're good.
Yes.
You're good. You're good. You're good.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, got to go with the Spider-Man reference there for everybody.
You have to. Yeah. If you can't do a Spider-Man reference for Macho
then
Man,
I can't be your friend.
Problem.
Yeah.
That's
I
right.
can't. If yeah, that's that. This is why I've been single for so long. No, I'm kidding.
Be a man, Hogan.
So,
yeah,
we tend to like to start these conversations off with just a simple question.
Mm-hmm.
For those that do not know, who
yes.
is Kevin?
Well, as we've established, I'm Kevin. I am an actor. I don't like to say I'm a voice actor because I do theater and my goal is to do TV film, and I don't like to be pigeonholed into that. But in this particular context, I'm a voice actor. And most of my career has been doing anime dubs, and I've done a ton of audiobooks for schools. And excuse me, got my fizzy water here, so I might be a little. What I'm probably most known for, some older series. My first major kind of big character was Harley Hartwell on Case Closed, or it's now back to Detective Conan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is a side note, full circle. I did that was my first show ever at Funimation at the time, and then a couple years ago they had given up on the license, and it was brought over to Bang Zoom. Mm-hmm. And I got to audition and play a villain in one of the movies, so it's like the circle of life, I guess, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I understand it's moved to Miami now, and I'm trying to get in over there.
Okay.
But let's see, what I'm probably most well known for is Kane Fury, Full Metal Alchemist. I'm also Vladimir in League of Legends, the game, if anyone plays that. Though that has a whole other, that has had a weird update in just the last week. So that we can chat about that a little later. I can't chat too much about it, but
yeah.
And then just a sprinkling of a ton of other shows. Like I was the narrator on Welcome to Demon School last year and this year. Just was the narrator on Rurouni Kenshin. Being a narrator apparently is my special skill on my resume because they keep getting cast as it. And then I was in World of Warcraft years ago. And then again, I do lots of audiobooks for schools and kids. And that's kind of who I am.
Okay, awesome. Well, Chip asked the question, who are you? Who are you? I'm going to ask the question, who were you? Before you began the voice acting, before you decided this is what I want to do for my career, for my life, Where did it all start for
Great
you?
Great question. So I didn't become interested in voiceover until I was in grad school at UCLA in 2000 something.
Gotcha.
Because, and this is, so a friend of mine, and again, I'm going to be aging myself. He used to be on Pee-wee's Playhouse, if anybody remembers that show. He was,
oh God, yes.
No,
he was
gosh.
Ricardo, the world's strongest man. He was the soccer player dude, Vic Trevino.
Oh my God, that's that
yeah.
guy.
Yeah,
wow.
He's one of my best friends. He was in the class behind me at UCLA, and we just connected because he's from San Antonio as well. Because up to then, I began acting in high school because of a girl. Who I'm still friends with today. We never got together. But I just fell in love with acting in high school. And so I did it in high school. I got my BA in theater at a college in San Antonio. And I did my grad work at UCLA to get a master's in acting. And so I met Vic, and we just became fast friends. And we were taking an independent study together of special effects makeup. So it was just me and him and this other girl. And we were just laughing the whole time. It was just ridiculous because don't put us together. It's awful. It's like David Tennant and Michael Sheen. That's kind of the relationship we have. But one day he said, Kevin, I can't come in at 11 a.m. because we made our own schedule. And he said, I got to come in at 1. I said, okay. And so he comes in at 1. I said, so why were you, what happened? He said, well, I had a voiceover to do. I'm like, oh, what is this voiceover thing you're talking about? And he said, "Oh, I'm the Spanish spokesperson for the Energizer Bunny." I'm like, "What?" And I said, "What's that like?" He says, "Oh, I just go into the studio. The director's in Philadelphia. The producer's in Chicago. It's all phone patch at the time. It's all computers now." Mm-hmm. And I was there for half an hour, and then he told me how much he made, and I was like, "I need to learn about voiceover." And I went to a couple of teachers even in grad school, and at that time, you know, again, we're talking 1999, 2000, 2001, okay, where information to the voiceover world was not as accessible as it is today. And equipment was not as affordable. I mean, this is why you would hear the same guy going Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. You know, you'd hear that voice in Chicago and in New York and in Miami and in California because it was such a small niche market. And I remember, there was a book I picked up. It took me years to find it. But do you guys remember the movie Good Morning Vietnam with Robin Williams?
Yes.
So Adrian Cronauer is a real, it's a real person. And he wrote a book on how to read copy. And it's a little dated for today. But one of the things he noted was that voiceover was the second most difficult form of entertainment to get into next to high fashion modeling. Back in the 80s, oh, wow, and 90s and early 2000s. I mean, once you're in, you were in, but everybody wanted to be in it, right? Because, you know, you get to work in your pajamas. You don't have to worry about what you look or anything like that. So I began researching as much as I could because every teacher I went with, you know, like I even went to my voice and speech teacher who was just this amazing actress named Judy Green. And she said, Kevin, I don't know. I've never done voiceover before. So I just started looking up every book I could find. And when I moved back to Texas, I mean, I was on Amazon, you know, this voiceover book. And I would ask other actors. I would say, do you do voiceover? It's like, oh, I've done an animation once. It's like, okay, how do you approach that? What was that like? Or if someone said, I do commercials. I said, okay, well, how do you approach a commercial script? And trying just to learn the process I spent about 3 years doing that. And so then, and at the time I'm working at this children's theater in San Antonio, I'm living with my folks and my dad just notices, he's like, what are all these Amazon packages coming? I said, there's these voiceover books. And I said, we didn't learn about this because it's so hard to get into. And I think, you know, I'm not a religious person, but I'm a, you know, if I think, you know, you, if you put your energy out there and your thoughts and your intentions, the universe just kind of lined up all these weird things. Because what basically happened is, I wanted to move to Dallas to try and get into the union there, hopefully where it'd be cheaper. I never got in the union there. I had to pay the $3,000 out here, which was just, ugh. But my dad mentioned this to his best friend in Dallas, who just happened to be in an office building where down the hallway there was a voice actor named Bob Magruder. He's passed away now. I think he was the narrator on Fairy Tale. And I think he did some other.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah, Bob Magruder. Great teacher, great guy. And just my dad just happened to mention this to his best friend. at the t and he said, "Do you want me to ask Bob if he'd talk to Kevin?" And I was like, "Yeah." So I called him up, and he said, "Yeah, you know, whenever you want, just, you know, just give me a date and we'll do lunch." And so my mom's from Dallas, so I took a weekend. I just went up there, and then he took me to lunch for like 2 hours. He talked about his radio career and his voiceover career. We went back to his office. He had a booth in his office, so he had me read some copy. And then he said, "Kevin, I've got," he says, "you're about 80% there." And I said, "Okay." And he mentioned that he did a class in Houston with a partner of his. And I thought, okay, you know, I'll move to Dallas. I started doing theater. I sent him an email saying, "Hey, you know, when your next Houston class is, please let me know. I'd love to join." And he says, "Kevin, I've got a class in 2 weeks here in Dallas. Send me $100, you're in." I could not write that check fast enough.
Wow.
And, you know, back in the day when we had checks, you know, you couldn't Venmo anybody.
I remember checks.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. So I get the check to him, right? In the interim, I go have dinner with a friend of mine that used to work at the theater, at the Children's Theater back in San Antonio, who's also now living in Dallas. And so she's like, "So, you know, Kevin, what are your goals here?" I said, "Well, you know, I want to get in the union. I want to do theater again. And I want to learn about voiceover." She's like, "Oh, I want to learn about voiceover too." I said, "Okay, let's compare notes. You know, if you find information, I said, I'm taking this class. I'll let you know." The next day she messages me, says, "Kevin, I found this company called Funimation. I think they do something with voiceover and English and cartoons." I'm like, "Oh, okay." Well, me being the natural dumbass that I am, I just call them up, say, "What do you guys do?" And the talent coordinator said, "Oh, well, you know, we do the English dubs for Japanese cartoons." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Is there a talent agency that you all maybe go through, or is there a casting director? How would one maybe, you know, submit to maybe be considered for auditions?" I said, "Oh, just send in your voiceover demo." I say, "Oh yeah, I'll do that as soon as, well, yeah, I'll send it in." Hang up. It's like, what the heck is a voiceover demo? But I'm going to find out at this class, right? So the week goes by. I'm in a great show at the time too that I love doing called No Sex Please, We're British, a great, great funny romp of a piece. That's the ADHD side quest right there. So just to throw that in there. So I go to class, and in the first floor of this office building where my dad's best friend is and Bob's office is a talent agency. And so there's about eight of us. We're like in a semicircle, you know, when you're like at a new student in a class, you know, and they go around one by one. We go like, "Hi, I'm Kevin. I've got a master's, but I don't know about voiceover, so I'm here." Two seats down, this guy says, "Hi, my name is Mike McFarland. For the last 5 years, I've been an actor, writer, director, and producer at Funimation, and I'm looking to branch out." What? I'm like, okay, I need to talk
Stars
to this
align.
Guy. Exactly.
Stars
the,
align.
The universe said, "You want this, I'm giving it to you on a platter." So I'm like thinking, how do I talk to this guy and not make like trying to flirt with him or something, you know? So all morning, we're reading, you know, different kind of copy, commercials and documentaries, you know, and we're getting direction and all this stuff. And then we take a lunch break. And I come back a little early, and I'm reading a book, and I'm just reading a book, and I hear this voice that says, "So you're from San Antonio, huh?" And I look up, and it's Mike. Excuse me. I'm like, "Yeah. Oh, I just moved here. I'm doing some theater, and I'm looking about voiceover," and I'm trying to be nonchalant, right? I'm trying to be like, you know, "So you're with that Fun Times or Funimate or what was it called?" I was like, "Oh yeah, Funimation." And I said, "You know, it's so funny. I just called them up like 3 days ago, and they said to send in a demo to get on the audition list. I'm hoping to learn, you know," well, we did learn what goes on a demo, but keep in mind, the dubbing wasn't talked about, because dubbing at that time, well, I mean, voiceover was a niche, right? Mm-hmm. Dubbing is a niche within a niche. Okay, it is super tiny. And I said, "You know, and then I said, "Maybe I could, you know, pick your brain, or maybe I can email you some questions." And when I mentioned the audition list, he kind of rolled his eyes, and I'm like, what do you mean by that?" He says, "Well, the audition list is a 2-year wait." I'm like, "Okay, well, I've got 2 years to make a great demo, you know?"
Yeah.
And in his generosity, and I will, to this day, he is the man that got me started in this. He says, "Kevin, I like your voice. You've got training. Send me your contact info. I'll put you in something." And 2 weeks later, I was on my first episode of Case Closed. And that's the story of how I got into the acting part. And I drove away that day. I had 11 lines. It took an hour and a half to do. Now, the goal is about 25 lines per hour is kind of the industry standard, right? I had no idea what I was doing, you know, and Mike was so patient with me because I kept saying, you know what, I really suck at this. You shouldn't pay me. Why would I say that? That was my, you know, actor insecurity. But I mean, there was some rewriting, you know, because in every session, rewriting has to happen. Sometimes the lines don't fit. There's too many words. There's too few words. We got to figure stuff out. But in his generosity, he brought me in, and that's just kind of how it started. And then other areas I branched out looking into, I got into audiobooks, and I've been a project manager for an audiobook company for a couple of years. I've been narrating for them for 10 years. So, with a sprinkle of still doing, getting my theater on and TV film is a big goal for me, coming up the next few years. Does that answer it? Guys, there's my long, long story.
It's great. It's, I was entertained by the whole thing.
Oh, so. Yeah. Did my job. Exit stage right. No, there we go.
So you met Mike. He put you in Case Closed.
Case Closed, yeah.
And then from Case Closed, kind of where do you branch off to from there?
Well, that's an interesting thing, too. There was a moment a couple of months later where I thought I would never work in anime again. So I did my first job. I can't remember the character's name, but I remember I was so excited. And they called me in again to do a little five line, like football player number two or something. I don't know what it was. But then he said, Kevin, okay, great. We're going to audition you for this character, Harley Hartwell. Now, I didn't know what the audition process was at the time. And I didn't know that what I went through was not the normal procedure.
Because it leads
into something where I thought I was going to be fired and never hired again. So at the time, obviously now they just send us scripts and we record it. I mean, I've got my booth right here. We just, you know, we record at home, email it in, right? At the time, auditions were held on Friday nights and we would go to the Funimation building. It was at the time it was in the Bank of America building in Fort Worth.
I keep hearing about the old bank building.
The old bank building. They had floors 2 and 4, I think. Like 4 was the music department, and then 2 was where like the 5 booths were or whatever. There'd be a couple of notebook, you know, 3-ring binders with 1-page character listings and, you know, description and some dialogue. And you thumb through it. You got 15 minutes. You pick a couple of characters you think you can do. The director will obviously also say, hey, I want you to read for this. So that was and then you don't record anything to picture because there's no picture to record to. You're just, you know, you're reading random lines from different scenes, right?
Okay.
So here I am. I finished my little football player number 2 or whatever. And Mike, so we watch a little bit of an episode to get the idea of Harley. We look over the script. We talk about the character. You know, he's like the Canadian counterpart to, you know, Conan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the audition page, you know, the picture, the description, and a few lines. And so I go in the booth. Nope, I'm not looking at a TV screen. I'm just reading the lines. We pitch my voice a little higher because he's a teenager. Hey, you know, right? Read the lines. And he says, great. Now, this is where it diverts from normal procedure. He says, great. Now let's record to picture. Now, I didn't know where this was going to go. So I go over to another booth and I record like just 3 lines for this, a different episode of Harley. Great. So about 2 weeks later, I get an email and it says, hey, Kevin, we need you for like 8 hours because, you know, congratulations, you're Harley. I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Oh, this is awesome. So there are 2 two-parters. I'm recording Monday and Tuesday for 1 two-parter. And then Wednesday and Thursday for the other 2-parter. Okay. We're talking eight hour days here or 6-hour days, whatever, you know. But now I'm not working with Mike on this first one. I'm working with Chris Kazin, who is thankful, a fantastic director and actor that I love hanging out with. He's out here in LA as well now. So I go in and I meet with him and he says, so, you know, what's your acting like? And I said, so we just kind of, you know, get to know each other real quick. And we go in. Now, I did something. Well, I didn't do something that I do now every time I go in to a project that I've done before. Is I ask to hear my audition or I ask to hear my last recording session to make sure I've got the voice right. I didn't do that this time. I didn't know. right? This is my third time in the booth ever. And so I don't remember exactly the voice notes I had with Mike. And so we start working on, you know, and so Chris says, let's work on the voice a little bit. And I do something, says that, great, I like that, let's do that. But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, I don't know, I think he was a little higher, a little younger in tone. And so I mention this, we start recording, and I'm nervous. I feel something is not right, but I didn't think to ask. I didn't know I could ask, could I hear my audition? And so we begin recording all this, right? And I know it's not the same tone. And I mentioned to Chris, I said, hey, you know, I'm just kind of worried that maybe this isn't what I initially did. He says, I like what you're doing. You know, this is his first appearance. You're great. You're golden. I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. I don't know how this works. I'm just going to dive in and do it, right? Finish day one, go into day two. We start recording again, and during the session. And then I look out the window of the booth and I see Mike come in, and they're joking around and pointing at me and laughing or whatever, you know. And then Mike leaves, and Chris hits the talk back button, says, hey, Kevin, we'll do one more line. We'll take a quick lunch break. Mike needs you for one line for something. I said, okay, sure, no problem. So I hop over to Mike's studio, and he says, yeah, I need one Harley line from you. I'm like, oh, okay. We haven't started. I'm a newbie. So I go in and I do the line in the vocal tone that I've been doing for a day and a half with Chris. And he said, and immediately, no, Kevin, remember, he's younger, got to be a higher tone. I'm like, oh no, I knew it was wrong. So I did it. I go to lunch. I'm nervous all through lunch. I got to tell Chris. So I go back. I say, Chris, remember when I was kind of worried about my vocal tone? I just told Mike, had me just do it higher. I think it's wrong. I, you know, what do we do? He says, hey, you know what? I like what you're doing. I've got you in the first episode. We're going to go with it. I'm like, okay. That's, you know, great. Awesome. You're the boss. I get a call that night about 9:45 from the talent coordinator saying, because the following morning I was working my day job for a few hours and then going to go in like around noon or one to start with Mike. Which I have to fix my days, because that would have been a Thursday instead. It was probably Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was going to be a day off. Thursday, Friday was going to be the next. That's how it worked, because I had to go in unexpectedly on Thursday. They call me Wednesday night and saying, Kevin, is there any way you can come in at 9 a.m.? I'm like, let me talk to my boss. I had a great boss at the time. He worked out my schedule and they let me go in at 9 a.m. So I get there and I go up to Mike's booth, you know, studio, and I knock on the door. It's like a horror, you know, the door just kind of, it's all dark inside. And I'm like, what is going on? And so I look around the corner and I see Chris in his booth, his studio. I say, hey, Chris, am I early? I don't see Mike. I'm supposed to be with him today, I think. And Chris is like, hey, Kevin, go ahead and sit down. I'm like, okay. He says, when you auditioned, did you record to picture? I was like, yeah, I think I did. I did like three or four lines. He said, well, here's what happened. Mike decided in that moment to cast you. And what you recorded was the teaser for another episode that had to be ready for a DVD that's already gone out. So the two episodes that we just spent 2 days recording, the sound design team just said, yeah, the voice doesn't match. And this has to go out to Cartoon Network Friday by 5 p.m. So you're with me today because we have to re-record both episodes today in the proper tone.
So you basically pulled an all, like two straight all-nighters, basically.
Well, we were lucky because what had happened in those 2 days where we did the first two episodes, we had figured out all the timing problems. We had figured out all the script issues. So we literally just went, they played the line, I repeated it in the proper tone and pitch for Harley and just made sure it fit. And we just went line after line after line. It was like about 6 hours it took us
okay
to get everything done. That was our only saving grace, is that all the problems had been fixed.
Gotcha.
And I drove away that night. And honestly, guys, I thought, you know, recasting, I'm sure is going to be super easy. You know, that was great. I'm going to go back to doing theater. That's where my life is going to be now. And thankfully, both Chris and Mike and many other directors cast me in future productions there. So that's what happened right after. And then And then the other thing too, so we finished that in the summer of 2004. I can't believe it's been that long already.
Wow.
Yeah. And that November is when they began casting Full Metal Alchemist. And so I remember going in for the auditions for that, and I read for Scar, and I read for a scientist. I never read for Fury, but whatever I did with the scientist, they liked and said, that's Fury. And so that audition led into the Fury casting. And then I just kept going.
Oh, wow.
After that. And then, you know, ups and downs. I mean, you know, I know where I kind of fall on the voiceover popularity ladder a little bit, but I'm very thankful for the characters that I've had. I'm very thankful that they've connected with people still. You know, I remember not more than, I mean, maybe 10 years ago, even I got an email from a mom whose autistic son had just discovered Full Metal Alchemist and loved Fury. And so my ex-girlfriend at the time is a graphics designer, and so she made a great combo picture of my headshot and Fury together that I got signed, and we sent it off for him, you know. And it just and then I think I can share this. So my dad's a psychologist, and he doesn't often work with youth, but mm-hmm. there was one family that asked if he would talk to their child, you know, just an initial interview. And it was this, and I'll never forget, he called me, and I knew he was in session, because I know when he's in his, you know. And he's like, Kevin, what animes have you done? I'm like, oh, what? He said, just like, what are the characters or titles? And so I said, like, Full Metal Alchemist, Case Closed. He said, okay, bye. And he hung up. And he calls me back later. So what happened was, is this child, you know, this teenager came in and was like, you know, so what do you like? He says, oh, you wouldn't understand it. It's anime, it's Japanese cartoons, and you know. And he says, ah, hold on. And that's when he called me. And when he mentioned saying, hey, my son played this character and this character, and it just transformed the whole session. And he opened up and my dad was able to help his parents find the proper treatment that they were looking for him. But that little moment changed everything. And that just, I mean, that's just sometimes the power of something, you know, whether it's anime or music or books or whatever, but you know, that's the stuff that I am very thankful for that I can experience.
That's a great
awesome.
Story, dude. That's
really
an awesome
great
story, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've done a lot of, you know, like you just talked about Case Closed,
yep.
Full Metal Alchemist.
Yep.
You've also done voices for Hunter Hunter, One Piece,
Hunter.
Pokemon, Sword Art Online. Blue
oh, I
Exorcist.
Forgot Sword Art Online. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a random question. How do you keep the voices separate? Like, how do you like, I mean, I'm sure you've been doing this for a very, very long time. So you're
sure.
A little bit more better at it than now, but how do you keep the voices? It sounds weird saying the voices.
Right.
How do you
how
keep
to make
it, like,
the voices
how do you
stop?
Remember like which particular character sounds a particular way?
Well, that's a fantastic question. So that it starts out with the process of creating the voice, whether, you know, getting the description and working with the director. And then I always ask for a reference, and I even keep some on my phone. That was a trick I read in one of these voiceover books, is you figure out kind of your pocket of characters that you could just kind of keep in your back pocket always. But I record, if I'm sitting there going, you know, I wonder if I put my voice back here. Oh, I kind of like that. I'm going to record that, you know, to have kind of like an aural reminder. And that usually kicks in pretty quick. And again, just because of now that I've had a lot more vocal training and voiceover training and understanding, you know, vocal placement in the mask, as we say, you know. But I desperately depend on references. So I've got snippets of characters all over my phone and my hard drive, you know. So that, you know, I, other actors, they just remember. I need all the help I can get. So, you know,
hey, I understand that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We asked, Vic Mignogna, that same question, mm-hmm. and he had a little bit more of a elongated, answer, saying that it also depends on what the Japanese voice sounds like. It also depends on what vision the director wants to use, and then
own
interpretation.
Like,
you look at a character, you say, I imagine he sounds like this, and then you work together and then you come up with the voice.
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's definitely a combination effort, you know. And what I often say too is that the voice has to, for me, the voice is always going to be secondary. And I think a lot of, especially a lot of young voice actors or, you know, newer voice actors fall into the trap of like, oh, what does he sound like? Or she sound like, or what does it sound like? But for me, it's always going to the personality first, because then if I understand the personality, I can start stealing voice ideas from other people. You know, that's kind of where I like to, because everyone has a voice. It's the goal of being a voice actor is bringing a character to a three-dimensional life, you know? So in fact, there's an actor named Pat Fraley, who he was the voice of Krang from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah. I knew that name from somewhere.
Okay. Yeah. If you haven't looked it up, look up his Krang audition that he talks about in his one-man show. He has a specific five-step process because he had 2 minutes to build that voice in.
Oh, wow.
And so he took the personality traits of, like, you know, he's suffering. Well, who's suffering? Well, you know, the Jewish mothers are always suffering, you know, and what if he's, you know, disgusted? Maybe he has indigestion, you know. So he picks the steps of building the voice off of the personality traits and then created that voice in under 2 minutes. So that's always where I start. Because also, too, even if I have a picture, the description may be completely different than what I think it is. So one of the tricks I do in one of my when I do a panel on voiceover is I put up a picture that it's a real audition I got of an Abominable Snowman character, and 95% of people will say, "Oh, I know what he sounds like," and go like this, and I'll be, you know. But then it's like, if you recorded that and sent it into the casting director, one, you wouldn't book the job, and two, I bet you would be blacklisted or put on a red list not to audition, because if you read the email description of the character, he is supposed to have a timid voice, he's shy, he whispers a lot, and so you miss all that. And so you don't want to fall in the trap of just looking at it. If you're lucky enough to get a picture of the character, sometimes you don't, but you don't fall in the trap of like looking at the picture and saying, I know how he sounds, because you may not. You want to read every single detail that the creator of that character has put in, because it could be the complete. And even when I audition, I'll do a complete opposite voice just for fun, because a lot of the times I've discovered that casting directors, even though they send you an audition with a description, that they don't always know what they really want. So if I have an opportunity to give two takes or three takes of a character, I'll go the complete opposite on one of them. I don't care. I'll throw the description out, you know, and I'll put something in there, and you never know. They may say, whoa, we never thought about that. In fact, I was in a session one time. I'd already been cast as a character. It was a financial advice from Warren Buffett for kids or something. And I remember I delivered the line. I forget who the director was, but I remember they said, oh, I would never have thought of to read it like that. That fits so much better than, you know, so you never know. So, you know, I've gone to the tangent here to auditions for characters, you know, but if you can do two takes, make sure you lock in the description for the first one. But the second one, I'd say do what you're inspired to do and see what happens. You never know. You never know.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Bro. Well, in doing a little bit of research, I discovered that you were also an ADR director. What was the
briefly? I had asked to direct. I was intrigued. I was interested in directing mm-hmm. at Funimation. So at the time, what they would do is they would have you sit in with directors, first of all, to watch the process. Because, you know, as an actor, you think you know what the directing process is. But then when you step back behind the table and watch them direct a different actor, then you sit, you know, you see the whole picture, you know. Right. And so I would shadow a couple directors, and then I stood in for a couple of directors, and then I did direct the last 10 up. Did I direct one piece? No, I wrote one piece. I directed the second half of a show called Peach Girl, who also had at the time someone who wasn't a celebrity, but Charles Baker, who was Skinny Pete on Breaking Bad, was one of the leads in Peach Girl.
I remember
and
him.
Got to work. Yeah, yeah. So, but now what was challenging about that is that they assigned that to me. I was like very excited. And they said, oh, yeah, but we're recording it at Okatron, at Chris Sabat's studio, Okatron. And I'm like, oh, that's the studio way in Dallas that a lot of the Fort Worth actors don't want to drive all the way out to. because the pay at the time, anime is one of the least paying jobs out there. Just so I'm sure that's been said before. Just for variation, at the time, well, it doesn't matter now because I think everybody knows the rates. At the time, I think the max was $50 an hour.
Oh, wow.
Doing dubbing, wow. Back in the day. Yeah, it's gone up to the non-union standard, I think, is like 125. I think, don't hold me to that. But just for comparison, I won't say the actual dollar amount, but I did 45 minutes for a Lego commercial, literally just going, this is not a brick. This is not a brick. It paid half my salary for the year. That's the difference between anime dubbing and commercial work. But anyway, wow. So yeah, no, that paid half. That was half my income. And it was, that was a good year. I'll put it like that.
Sounds like it.
Oh, but that's the kind of job that I want over and over again. But they put me at Okatron, which is great. But if you look at the credits, a lot of the side characters in one episode are all the engineers from Okatron, because it was so hard to get actors to drive all the way out there. And so I had to throw myself in a couple of times, and you know, it was challenging. I'm sorry, but now I've gone on. So what was your question about ADR directing?
Well, I was going to say, what was the, you kind of answered it. What were some of the things that you directed? And everything.
It was Peach Girl. And I was offered to direct something after that, but I, you know, here's the thing, even with directing, now I think it's changed now. I think directors, at least at Funimation, are salaried employees, I think. Don't hold me to that. I think I heard that, though. At the time, though, it's all contract work. So mm-hmm. You never know when your next assignment is coming in. So, like, just for an example, I haven't had an anime audition in about 5 months. So, you know, that's just how the industry works. You know, it's so up and down. And so I had just taken a job, a 2-month job at the Dallas Theater Center doing tech work, when they offered another show. And I said, I just signed a contract, you know. So, but then that's when I ended up getting it. I decided to take a break after that. And I went back to San Antonio and I taught at a college for a while with Vic. Actually, Vic hired me. And then moved back out to LA. So I'd love to try directing again. You know, for me, some of the challenges, I think I, you know, because you have to wear, you know, as an actor in dubbing, you're wearing two different hats, because you have a technical side and you have the act and the artist side, right? You're right. Bringing this character to life, and you're, you know, you're part of the story. And what is your part? How do you propel the story forward? But then you also got to look at things like, I'm timing. Okay, you got to make sure, you know, don't talk too fast, because you only have this number of flaps to fill, you know. And so you're kind of doing this thing, right? You know, where I've got to be on time, but I've got to be, you know, an artiste, you know, as a director. You know, you're you know, bringing the script to life. You know, you have to deal with issues like, again, too many words or too few words, and you got to rewrite the script. Or you know, you have to really work with the engineer to make sure that the audio does match the way you want it to match. Because I mean, I got a few notes sometimes saying, you know, hey, you're one flap short on this, you know, and we can't stretch it. You got to re-record it, you know. So there's a lot of technical elements that go in with it. But I'd love to do it again, you know, a short series, you know, not probably not a full length, you know, 52 episode or anything like that. But, you know, yeah, there we are, I think.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That cool. Answered the question.
Okay. I'm always nervous.
Now, you did mention that you were a writer on One Piece. Yes. Was there anything else besides One Piece that you have written?
I am a terrible writer. I only wrote I wrote a couple of episodes of one, because I did all the script prep for One Piece for a mm-hmm. long time. And what that was is that so that the writers could can just focus on, you know, taking the translation and writing dialogue, I went through and, you know, I put the time codes and I put what character was speaking, you know, in order, and, you know, wall of sound, you know, cheering for 13 seconds or whatever, you know. And that show was, there was one episode, no, it was a two-parter, and there were all these chefs. And I mean, they were fat and thin, but the true only distinguishing element was their mustache design. So I had to pause, and I was screen capturing and taking profile pics of all the different chefs, because I had to find lines for them, because you had to make sure it was the same actor, doing the line. And I think I was like, you know, I went from Chef A to like Chef TT, I think. It was something ridiculous like that.
Wow.
And I bet that was a strenuous process,
oh,
wasn't
God.
It?
Oh, it's just sitting there saying, okay, oh, crap, here's another mustache. I got it, you know. And I took the picture and I put it in my chart. And I'd make sure that's, okay, that's Chef Z, you know, and I've got to figure out what they're saying. And there was one time, there was a scene where all these pirates were wrapped up in a big ball, like in that scene from Pirates of the Caribbean. And I luckily at the time had a huge, ridiculously heavy Sony TV at the time, but I could zoom in and it looked like, if you're just watching it, there's no flaps, but something caught my eye and I zoomed in and sure enough, there were tiny little flaps going for this one little character. So I was like, there are flaps there. You got to figure it out. Not me, you know? So, but yeah, I'd love to try writing again. It was definitely not my strong suit. I did write one episode of, I can't remember. I also did the script prep for it. It was about these female knights, the same thing, where they all kind of had just either blonde or brunette hair. The distinguishing element was that the little symbol on their armor was different. So that was the same thing. I had to go through and cut out little screenshots of every symbol to make sure Claymore. That's it. Claymore.
Yep.
Okay.
I wrote one episode of Claymore and, that I dove into too quickly, you know, and I wasn't very good at the time. I'd love to try it again though. You know, I think I've read enough and, I'd like to see if I could bring it a little more loosey goosey and bring it to life a little bit more. But, yeah, I've had very limited directing and writing experience, but open to trying it again. Yes.
You obviously you're in the world of anime with all these different voices stuff. Now, yeah. Were you a fan of anime before you got into the voice acting?
No, I didn't know. Well, I'll tell you this. So when I was a kid, my two favorite shows were Battleship Yamamoto and what I knew as G-Force or Battle of the Planets. I didn't know they were two different versions of the same series of Gatchaman. I didn't know that was considered anime, but before then, no, I really hadn't. I mean, I'm a comic book guy. I'm a Star Trek guy. You know, that's kind of where my fandom went into initially. And when I got hired, it was an acting job is how gotcha. I looked at it, where I know a lot of fans who have moved into the industry, you know, they were obviously fans wanting to work in it. To me, it was just, it was no different than auditioning for a TV or film or a theater piece. I'm auditioning for an acting job. And so I watch a lot more now when I can. But yeah, no, before then it was just, it's like, oh, it's cartoons. Great. You know, can I do it? And I'm terrified, you know, and had some stumbles as I've mentioned, but thankfully they didn't fire me. So,
but do you currently watch any anime right now?
At the moment, no. I'm really strong in my Star Trek world. One of my big goals is to be on Star Trek because I just come to I go to a gym for nerds in Burbank, and one of my gym mates, I don't know him, again, acquaintances. He's been very nice to me, but. Yeah, come to find out, he played Captain Shaw on Picard season 3.
And, oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
I was like, I'm working next to a captain for a year because he couldn't tell anybody. Todd Stashwick, he's the coolest guy. So, but, you know, a big inspiration to follow my Star Trek dream. So my focus right now is a lot of Star Trek.
Nothing
wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. I respect it.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite season of Star Trek, or series?
Ooh, well, boy, we could talk a lot about that.
Star Trek continues.
Star Trek continues.
I don't know, I'm just saying.
I'm a Next Generation guy. I'm a Next Generation guy.
Next subject about Mr. Manana.
I just had to bring that up, I'm sorry.
That's all good. No, it's all good. We could talk about it if you want.
We don't have to.
I may never have a fan again, but we'll see. No. So I started and
we'll save that for after the recording.
A private conversation. So I started with the original series when I was in eighth grade. My buddy William Johnson said you should check out this thing called Star Trek. It was shown at midnight on Saturday nights on KRT TV in San Antonio, Texas. And my parents would let me stay up to watch it. And I'll never forget, my first episode was an episode called Arena with the Gorn, where you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
out of nowhere, I see this posting on Facebook last year that there is a Star Trek exhibit at the Skirball Center here. It was at the Skirball Center here in LA. And so I got me a ticket on a Sunday morning and I went down and they had the original Gorn costume right there. So I was like, circle of life, you know? I started with, though I am very sentimental now. I'm getting real sentimental in my old age with Next Generation. I just, in fact, someone put a post of them walking on the bridge in season 3 of Picard again. And I'm like, no, I'm not crying. That's dilithium crystal dust in my eyes. I'm not bawling my eyes out because my childhood is right there.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I remember watching Encounter at Farpoint when it premiered, and I remember all good things at a party when it ended. I mean, that was my Star Trek right there. Then I would follow that up with, so I would go original series, Next Gen. I was a late bloomer into DS9. Again, though, I have another weird connection to DS9 because I had just gotten into grad school. I was in college when it started, and I was getting into grad school, and I was working at a children's theater full time as a teacher and an actor. And so my free time had just kind of lost. But we had a teacher, if you're a DS9 fan, at my grad school named Salome Jens. Who she was probably in her 60s at the time, but you know, she was this very elegant, you know, actress, and you know, she was a dancer, so she like just like floated into class all the time, right? And she comes in one day, she goes, "Hello, oh, class, by the way, I did a piece where I had to recreate her on stage, and this is my version of how she talks. Class, wow. we might have to meet at Paramount. I have 6 weeks of Star Trek to film." And I'm like, what? So she was the leader of the Dominion, the female shapeshifter on DS9.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
And she just appeared in Discovery. Because she also was the actress that played that episode where it was the Romulans, Cardassians, Klingons, and humans, and they all come together, and there's that hologram of that creature saying, "We sp-." That's also Salome Jens.
I'm sorry. Wow. I thought you said Kardashians for a second. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, was it Kardashian? No, it was. Was
no,
it,
it wasn't
Kardashian.
No,
was,
Kardashians. No,
that's a whole different alien. That's all that is.
Okay, so wait, who was the episode where it was Picard and the crew? It was Klingons, definitely.
It was Klingons. Yeah,
was it Romulus?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Romulus.
Okay, well, it was Romulus. Yeah. Anyway, that's also her. So she came. So I freaked out, and regretfully, they worked around her teaching schedule. Damn you, Paramount! And so we never had to meet. But a quick little ADHD side story. Our program had ended a quarter early. This is how the quarters work at UCLA, but one of my classmates was still taking private lessons with Salome, and I had found a great 8x10 of her from DS9 in the full makeup, and I said to Anne, can you please take this to Salome and ask her to sign it? And she's like, yeah, and I get it back, and it just says best wishes, Salome Jens, and I'm like, why isn't it to Kevin, my favorite actor ever? We had a rocky start my first year between me. I didn't understand Stanislavski very well. That was her training. But I got it later on. We became lovely friends. So I took it to our showcase where I knew she was going to be at. And I brought a Sharpie and I said, Salome, why didn't you just say to Kevin? And in the sweetest voice, she says, oh, I thought you might want to sell it on eBay or something. No! This is going to go on my wall. Are you kidding me? So that's my little connection with Salome Jens. All these Star Trek people have been. Another teacher, actually, Ellen Gear, who was our Shakespeare teacher. Do you remember the episode in Next Gen where it was the mother trying to get information from Data about her son who had been killed by the crystalline entity?
Yes,
I do.
Okay, that's Ellen Gear, my Shakespeare teacher, and I never brought it up, but there's one scene where she's got a tricorder and it's upside down, and I'm like, somebody messed up continuity, you know, so there we are.
Yes. Yeah.
All the little Star Trek connections.
Yeah, I grew up on...
Oh, yeah, what are your favorites?
I grew up on Next Gen and went back to watch the originals, which I love the originals.
Oh, yeah.
And I even really enjoyed the crossover movies that they did with the next gen and original. I thought those were really good. So, but I think I'm very partial to next gen.
Absolutely. No, I totally
I
get
was a
it.
next gen kid.
Next
Funny
gen kid.
enough, funny enough, I was also like, I wasn't really into Star Trek as much as I was like other stuff that I was watching.
Sure.
I'm a big pro wrestling fan. So
Oh, nice.
on Monday nights, especially when they were back in the TNN slash Spike TV days,
Oh my
when it
gosh.
came on at 9 o'clock, there was always that 1 hour, that 8 o'clock slot was always Star Trek: The Next Generation. So I
Love
would
it.
watch Star Trek: The Next Generation going into
Enter.
watching Monday Night Raw. So it
Love
was
it.
like,
I love it.
and back then Raw was 2 hours,
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
so yeah.
I there's there was a small just another side. I did a voiceover. I did some voiceovers for a small wrestling company out here that Mysterio's part of. And it's like, wrestling coming this Sunday at the fairgrounds.
Was it
Good
Lucha
stuff.
Underground?
No, I'm
No.
much smaller than that. This
Okay,
was.
okay, okay.
Let's just say that the payment was a very nice dinner.
Oh wow.
That
That's a
kind
true
of
pro wrestling
that.
payout.
Yeah.
You were at an outlaw show, bro. That's where you were.
No, man. No, it was
Time out.
one of my.
Was it a hot dog and a handshake?
No, they took me to a pretty decent restaurant. The guy took me. No, so
Okay.
one of my it was one of
Okay.
my gym mates at this nerd gym. He was training to be a wrestler. And it's whatever little, it was all, whatever fairgrounds in Bakersfield they were doing. Oh, look, they're on YouTube. I'll send you guys the link if you want a
Probably
good
pro
reference
wrestling,
back. Definitely.
probably pro wrestling gorilla, probably.
Something, yeah.
Oh,
I remember
I bet it.
Mysterio was involved with it. I think he was helping like fund it probably.
Maybe.
And then Rikishi, he was the one that was also involved in
Oh,
it.
it's
Is
it
Isn't it, you guys know what it is?
oh
We might
gosh.
know what it is
I'll
because
look up the
Rikishi
link.
does have a school out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's whatever was related to Rikishi. I'll send you the links. Have a good laugh over it. So you
Right.
But
put it in the interview thing. We'll see what
yeah,
happens.
put in the
Yeah,
thumbnail.
there you go. There you go. Yeah.
But no, I'm probably also next generation guy, but I
Yeah.
have a soft spot for Deep Space Nine as well.
I was going to go back with that. So that's when I went back to DS9. As when I got back into grad at that time in grad school, and I fell in love with it. I mean, I remember reading an article somewhere that the critique said of all the Star Treks, he thought it was the best written, and I think I might have to concur with that because,
I'd
obviously,
have
being on
to
a
go
space
back.
dish, on a space station, you have to focus more on the relationships than the exploration, and I thought that they handled it so beautifully, and now the rumors of how the cast worked with each other, that's a whole different story. Was not as buddy buddy as Next Gen, from what I understand. I do like Voyager a lot. I really enjoyed Voyager. And minus the theme song, I was I remember I was so excited about Enterprise. I was because I was in grad
I really
school
enjoy it.
2000 it premiered in my last year in grad school, and I was like, oh, how can I audition for this? Side note, that was Todd's. He was on Enterprise before he was, Captain Liam, and he's a obviously a big fellow geek and nerd, and that was like a big bucket list thing for him.
Oh, wow.
But yeah.
Presumably you still watch Star Trek,
Oh,
right?
so I don't know if it's an ADHD thing or a depression thing, but there I fall into the trap of like I just watch series over and over and over again.
It's both.
Whether
It's
okay,
both. Because
great,
I do
I've
the
got
same thing.
both. Oh,
I do the same
fantastic.
thing.
I'm
You would
depressed
not
and I have
believe.
no attention.
I would watch a program for like days on end, and my wife would literally be like, "I'm gonna kill you if I hear that one more time."
Amen, brother. Right there
I've
with
done it
you.
with Bar Rescue. I've done it with the Three Stooges. I've done
Yep.
it with God, I've done it with Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like a whole bunch of shows
Yeah.
that I'm just fans of. And then I just watch it over and over again. It's
I
like,
just
listen, I love you, but please watch something else.
I know. I
It's
just go back to
my
it.
therapy at the moment. Like,
Exactly.
I can't tell you how many times I've rewatched all three seasons of Bluey. You know what I mean?
There you
So,
go. Absolutely. No, I will
Roger knows.
I'll do all the Star Treks, cause, and I'll also make up my background noise when I'm working, is I'll just hit run, yeah, I'll do all the Star Treks over and over again. I do X-Files.
Oof.
Yeah, X-Files again, man, those 90 pantsuits, man. I just went back. You know what I'm talking about. You know
Hey.
what I'm talking about. Those
Hey.
shoulder pads.
Hey, man.
Come on
Yes.
now. Come on.
Hey, 90s was different.
It was a different, it's a whole different era. No, I just started. I just picked up a beautiful first print copy of the Topps comic book X-Files number one. I'm trying to complete my collection there.
Oh wow!
I probably paid too much for it, but it's gorgeous. But no, I'll X-Files, all the Star Treks, House MD. I don't know why I get sucked into that.
I love
one
House.
A lot.
I watch it all
House
the time.
Is good. And
if any actors are watching, go watch Hugh Laurie's House audition. It is the best audition process, and he does one tiny little thing that so many actors miss. I'll give these guys my email address. If you figure out what it is, email me, let me know. Because if you figure out the one little thing he does, your auditions will exponentially just be so much better. It's amazing. I'll tell you guys after we're stopped talking.
All right.
Recording.
So I asked that to ask. Yeah. Do you watch any of the animated Star Trek, Lower Decks or Prodigy?
I have to confess, I'm a little behind on the new stuff. I don't know what it is that I keep falling, except for Picard. Mm-hmm. I watched the first two seasons of Discovery. I watched the first season of Lower Decks. And I don't know, just because of my work, I want to focus on them because I haven't seen them yet.
Yeah.
And it's easier for me to put on, an episode of Next Gen in the background. And I'm sure subconsciously my mind is just repeating all the dialogue, so I have a goal over the holidays, this coming holidays, when I go home for about a week or 2 weeks, I'm just going to catch up on everything of the new stuff. But I have watched the animated series of the originals, the old 70s cartoon.
Yes.
Because I just discovered kind of how, if you guys know the history of that, that they were only going to hire William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy, and James Doohan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Oh, wow.
And
I did not know that.
Yeah. And they were going to have James Doohan do Sulu and Chekhov and all the other monster voices, and then hire an unknown actress for Uhura, just because they couldn't have the money. Leonard Nimoy is the one who went to bat and said, they need acting work. You need to hire them. And the only one that's not on there is Walter Koenig. They did not have enough money to bring him on as Chekhov, would just be just a stab. I think some of the reason was he came in season two, he wasn't part of the whatever, bunch of BS. But I believe he did write an episode. So he is involved. He got involved a little bit, but that's one series. That's one animated series. I bought that years ago, and I watched it repeatedly
right,
as well.
Of course.
So, but yeah, no, I'm excited to get caught up on everything because I need to know it so I can audition for it in the future.
There's where I was going with that. In your dream of being in Star Trek, would you settle for a voice in the animated?
I will do anything for it. I will be a dead Romulan in the background where you can never see me, just to be on Star Trek. It's not settling at all. It's being part of the Star Trek universe. And I'll put this, and we can talk about this while I say this after a recording. I want to be part of Star Trek in an official capacity. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
So if you know what I'm talking about. Yes. I will do, I mean, voiceover, background, extra, give me, there's a meme on TikTok, I think, talking about, I just want to have a character that has five lines on Star Trek and then just do convention signing Funko Pops for the rest of my life.
There you go.
And I'm like, that's it.
That's perfect. That's the life right there,
that's
man.
That's my dream right there. It's crazy.
There you go. That's
crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Another question that I had, we just recently asked you, about all the different voices that you do and things of that nature. Having all these voices in your head, do you have a favorite? Like, is there one that just like, I love this voice. I love the fact that I was able to do this. I'm grateful for it. I mean, obviously you're grateful to get any of the work that you can get, but
I'm an actor.
Is there
of course
one...
I'm grateful.
Right. But what I'm asking you is there one particular voice that is your favorite?
Well, I'm going to rephrase that question because I don't,
go ahead.
Maybe I'm different than that. What is there a character that's my favorite?
Go ahead.
Voices. I think it was characters. I've got two answers for that. So for anime, I love Kane Fury. There was just something about getting to play a young kid like that. So kind of here, you got this military kid, who's so, bright eyed and bushy tailed, and all this craziness and madness is going on around him. Right. But just finding that kind of humor in him was such a real treat for me. And the side note on that too, I should mention, is where Mike did an amazing thing where he did not have to do this. I had already moved to LA when Brotherhood started recording. So even though you see Fury a lot, he doesn't talk a lot. And I honestly thought that just recast him. I mean, you know, it's not, again, $50 an hour. It's not worth it to fly all the way back to Texas on a $300 flight ticket, you know, to do 2 hours worth of work and then fly back. I mean, there's just no point. And that at this time they weren't doing remote recording, you know. That was about 10 years ago. And I get an email from Mike out of nowhere who said, hey, Kevin, can you find a recording studio? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? He says, well, we got some Fury lines. I'll record them in the timing that we need to match flaps and in the kind of performance I'm looking for you. If you can get to a studio and have them record you, just email it back to us. I was like, whoa, okay. So I called up Bang Zoom. And they were very generous. They gave me, they kind of turned it into a teaching session with an engineer and a new engineer. And so, because it was like 11 lines, you know, which again, as I mentioned, my first time took an hour and a half. I'm done in 15 minutes, you know, now. But
Right.
so I got to play Fury still, and Brotherhood recorded it at Bang Zoom. They didn't charge me anything. They were very generous because I think they love the character too, you know. But you know, so his voice and just his personality, you know. And then, video game wise, I love Vladimir from League of Legends. You know, just like go ahead, be negative, you'll be just my type. You know, there's just that villains are always so much, I think, more fun. There's more, I mean, there's depth to main characters, but there's, you know, to figure out why a villain is a villain, you know, is there's a lot of fun in that, I think.
Yeah.
And it's also such a difference from, you know, Cain Fear. It's like, oh my gosh, I, you know, can I say Black Hayate to being a vampire? You know, there's just that. A great little change, you know. So those are the two that I think character-wise the most fun that I love to that I get asked most often to do too, you know. So yeah. That's a long-winded answer for you. My God.
No, it's perfect. It's
perfect.
great.
You are good.
It is, and you're right, it is always more fun to play the bad guy
Oh yeah.
in a
Oh
sense.
yeah.
Like the three of us were all involved in the professional wrestling industry at one point, and we all love playing the bad guy. It's
I mean
so much
that's
fun.
because everybody loves the villain. Everybody loves the villain. You know, they want to see the villain lose, but they love them for, but they need to see them in that journey. And yeah, it's great. That's awesome.
Except Shao Tucker. He was a piece of shit.
Oh,
But
there you go.
anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just one, I guess, almost last question.
Okay.
You said you were born in San Antonio.
I was raised in San Antonio. Yeah, I technically, if we're gonna get technical, I was born in Tucson, Arizona, but my parents moved when I was like 6 months old. So
Okay.
my dad was just there for college, you know.
So
Yeah.
raised in San Antonio,
Yep.
moved to Dallas for a little while, and now you live in California.
Almost. I was raised in San Antonio, I came out to LA to go to grad school.
Okay.
Lucky me, when we graduated, there was an actor strike going on at the time. Couldn't find an agent, couldn't find work. So I go back to San Antonio to work at my old theater. I'm there for 3 years, learning about voiceover, then moved to Dallas, and then finally Dallas back to LA. So it's crazy, crazy business.
Why LA? Is it just more convenient for like acting roles, or you just love
Yes, because
LA?
my ultimate goal is TV film. And
Okay.
one of the things when I was looking at grad school, because I was looking at New York and I was looking in LA and I was looking at Chicago, and I'll never forget, I had a teacher tell me, you want to train in the industry you want to work in. So if you want to work on Broadway or theater, Chicago, Minnesota, and New York. If you want to do TV film, train in LA. So that's why I picked UCLA, and when they offered me to be a student to join the MFA program, and again, you know, I don't get me wrong, I love doing voiceover and everything, but my big goal is still TV, a lot more TV film work, and because there's definitely not a lot of good theater out here, sadly, but that's kind of why, that's the main reason why that my voiceover, I love doing it, it's great. But I want to be on TV film. And that's going to be LA, you know. So,
Definitely understandable.
or
Yeah,
Atlanta too.
absolutely.
I mean, I've had a number of actor friends move to Atlanta and do very well now, obviously with all the studios there. But that's kind of the main reason, was my goal is still really overall. And But to keep it in voiceover is I'm at the gym every day now because I got to lose some weight here because I want to do motion capture for video games. Ooh, and a nice. Lot of that cool. is still filmed as filmed here, basically. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I guess last question.
Okay.
If people want to follow you on social media or whatnot, where do they yes. go?
Perfect. So so let's see, at Instagram and TikTok. I'm not very good at TikTok. You know, I'm old. You know, get off my lawn. I'm working on it. I can be found at Kevin M. Connolly. And then boy, you put me on the spot here. I got rid of the Twitter thing. So I'm on Threads, but the same thing as Instagram, right? So it's Kevin mm-hmm. M. at Kevin M. Connolly. Mm-hmm. And then I have to look it up now because I can't remember my Facebook. I had to do my Facebook different only because my private family Facebook is my name. So I couldn't use that one. So it's going to be at, how do I get to my profile? Oh, dear. I think it's, is it official Kevin M. Connolly, facebook.com, official Kevin M. Connolly. And look, there's a post from Ricardo right there. Look at that. Oh, wow.
Awesome.
My buddy Ricardo from Desperate Housewives. I got to give him a text. I haven't talked to him in forever. Yeah. official Kevin M. Connolly on Facebook. And I post ridiculously stupid. Like I made a post about a joke came up in one of my fitness classes, how I felt my hamstrings were really stretching, you know, in the stretching class. And I said, boy, they feel like muscle socks. And I found a pair of muscle socks that you can buy that I shared on. That's what you're going to get from my Facebook and probably my Instagram. So it's nothing you're going to say, oh, good Lord, no, don't follow Kevin. But if you want silliness and comic book stuff, that's where you find me.
We're Perfect. All about that.
Awesome. 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 Awesome.
Yes.
Kevin, I heard one time somebody said that the greatest thing that a man can share is his time, and we greatly appreciate you sharing your time with us this
absolutely
evening.
Absolutely honored.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. This has been a blast. Tell me to shut up next time. I'll be better. But
No. Keep talking. No, okay. This is we're having way too much fun listening to
okay,
you.
Okay, cool. This has been great.
Yeah, but if you want to just hang out with us for just one more second while we pay a couple of bills, thank you guys so much for tuning in tonight to tonight's episode. Again, Kevin, we appreciate you for being here tonight. Chip, Roger, anything you guys want to say before we bounce out of here this evening?
As always, please do not leave without leaving a like, comment, share, and subscribe on Spotify and right here on YouTube.
Your turn, Roger. Oh.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I completely forgot. Now, I don't have anything there yet, but I will be on Streamily this year with Prince. I don't do a lot of conventions, but I'm having some new prints made. So if you want to, I'll have some in the store there, and I'll let these guys know when that's official and everything's up. But
we'll put it in the description. We can go back and add.
I think it's also Kevin M. I'm so boring. It's just my name. Okay, but there you go. Sorry, Roger, you're up. Come on,
Roger, you're up. Go ahead.
No, thank you guys as always for supporting us, showing us love. Because of you guys, we are able to do great stuff like this, where we get to interview people we, you know, listen to and watch and everything like that. And because of you guys, our dreams are sort of, you know, coming true little by little. And thanks for all that kind of stuff. And we're very grateful. So thank you guys for the support.
And if you do want to continue to support Movement Radio, check out streamlabs.com/movement-radio/merch and go copy some merch. We got a whole lot of cool ideas that we're looking forward to for some new merch ideas. We have our My Hero Academia inspired shirt. We have our Dragon Ball Z inspired shirt. We have the old school Movement Radio logo, the new school Movement Radio logo. Maybe another new logo coming soon for Movement Radio. Who knows? Just stay tuned for that. Again, streamlabs.com/movement-radio/merch. Again, Kevin, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you
guys for joining us tonight. And until next time, I'm Talon Williams.
I am Chip Hazard.
And I'm Roger Sierra.
And this is Movement Radio.
God's plan.